Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today to discuss Fortune Minerals' planned purchase of the Ravenny Silver Mine. On this call, we may refer to forward-looking statements made in the news release, and we make those and other forward-looking statements during this call. For more information regarding risks associated with forward-looking statements during this call, please refer to the company's news release or the legal notice on the company's website. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press the star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the star followed by the two. If you have any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star zero for the operator at any time. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded, and the audio cast will be distributed in a subsequent news release. I would now like to turn the conference over to Robin Goad, President and CEO of Fortune Minerals. Please go ahead, Mr. Goad.
Thank you, Joanna, and thank you, everyone, for participating in this call today to discuss the Ravenny Silver Mine transaction by Fortune Minerals Limited that was announced last Friday. With me today on this call, I've also got the company's Chief Financial Officer, Adam Jane, who is also available for questions later on in the presentation. Also, our Chief Operating Officer, Mike Romaniak, as well as Jim Williams is participating from Denver, and he is representing the selling group and will be able to also answer questions from the audience. And then Troy Nazarevich, our investor relations manager, is also on the call. So just to give you a little bit of an introduction on the agenda, I'm going to give a brief description of this acquisition, why we feel it's accretive to shareholders, the opportunity that the project represents, and then also I'd like to refer everybody that there is a presentation which is now available on our website which describes the Ravenny Silver Mine as well as some of the economic metrics of this project. And I'd invite you to visit our website, download this presentation, and we will be updating it periodically as we progress through the continued commissioning and ramp up to 400 tons per day on this asset. So we're foremost very pleased to be sharing this important new development in Fortune's growth with you. We feel it's an accretive and very transformational acquisition that accomplishes our near-term goal of becoming a metal producer with tremendous organic growth opportunities from not only this acquisition, but as well as our existing portfolio of development assets. It's very important that everybody recognizes that we are in no way departing from the development of our NICO and Arctos projects. They are still actively being pursued. In fact, the senior management team from this company is off to China later this afternoon to continue discussions with our strategic partner on the project financing for the NICO development, and it's very important that everybody recognize that China Campsie Engineering Company Limited, as well as Procon, their Canadian-controlled subsidiary, participated in the due diligence of this project, as well as the financing to acquire the initial stage, first stage of the acquisition as well. So Fortune has been actively pursuing an acquisition in the precious and metals space, and that would not only provide the company with a clear path to cash flow, but also the status change to metal producer that hopefully comes with a re-rating change of the company's market capitalization reflecting this change. It's very important to note that companies that have cash flow producing operations typically trade at a higher multiple, and they also, this acquisition we believe will open up our shareholder base, particularly to generalist funds in the United States, and that only buy companies with cash flow or with companies with producing assets. The other thing about this transaction, it's been structured in stages in order to minimize equity dilution to our existing shareholder base. About half the acquisition costs are reflected as deferred payments that we believe that can be funded from cash flows from the operation. In addition, the current owners of the project become large shareholders of Fortune Minerals and will have a vested interest in the company's success, not only at the Ravenny Silver Mine, but also in the development of our other assets, particularly the NICO gold, cobalt, bismuth, copper development in the Northwest Territories and Saskatchewan, as well as the Arctos project in British Columbia. The principal of the selling group, James Williams, who's on this call today, will also be nominated to the board of directors at the AGM, which is going to be held later in June. And we welcome having Jim as expertise with this particular asset, but also his long history of deal flow in both the mineral space and in the petroleum industries, which we believe will also be accretive to the skill sets on our board of directors. We're very excited about acquiring the Revenue Silver Mine because it's a high-grade deposit that is fully permitted and constructed and is now in the commissioning phase and ramping up to a targeted production rate of 400 tons per day. This is not a project that is that requires us to go through a lengthy permitting process or any other sort of process to achieve commercial operations other than the continuation of the current ramp up. So this project is fully permitted, fully constructed, and is producing concentrate right now. Fortune Minerals has prepared a financial model for this project that was based on the resources that were identified by SRK Consulting, and the costs that that we've used in our financial model are actually more conservative than the financial model that was used by the selling group and their financial advisors, Deloitte Corporate Finance Canada. Incidentally, Deloitte, who are working for us on finding additional strategic partners for our NICO and Arctos projects, we're working for the selling group on this particular case. And our financial model has used more conservative resource assumptions, more conservative dilution assumptions, more conservative recoveries for the metals, and we feel that it properly reflects the opportunity that we are recognizing with this asset. So what that model points out is that we will have annual production of 1.78 million ounces of silver at the 400 ton per day production rate, plus another 25% of revenues achieved from byproduct credits of gold, lead, and zinc, and also the opportunity in the future to recover other metals. The 6% discounted pre-tax net present value for this project is $121 million, about double what the company is currently valued in the marketplace at. So we feel that is a very clear metric of representing about $120 million of additional value over and above what we get with the NICO and Arctos development. We've projected annual EBITDA of about $15.5 million and a 13-year mine life EBITDA of about $202 million. We've examined peer group companies in the silver space with comparable resources and grades, and we've identified that those typically traded about 8 times EBITDA on average, which also demonstrates about $120 million in valuation, without giving any value whatsoever for Arctos and NICO, which is again double what our current market capitalization is currently trading at. We have very low C1 cash cost for this asset, about $8 per ounce. So it's very important that the very high grades that we see, particularly in the Virginia vein, allow for low cost production and for this project to succeed in a low metal price environment typical of what we have today. Any additional increase in the silver price over and above our base assumptions, this project generates very significant cash flows. Additionally, the post-transaction value of this asset has also been modeled, and it shows even after paying for the asset, this project generates a 22% internal rate of return and a $65 million net present value. So this is certainly a very accretive transaction in terms of the valuation and the metrics that have been identified in our financial model. As we pointed out earlier, some of the other things that are important in a re-rating of the stock would be for us to open up our opportunity basically to additional shareholder bases, particularly in the United States, where we feel that we will now have access to generalist funds and the kinds of companies that are now buying resource exposure in the U.S. now that the blue chip space has been fully valued. Our financial model was prepared to assess project economics using a long-term silver price of $21.50, but we've also modeled it with sensitivities in a low silver price environment. And we've talked about the low C1 cash cost of $8 per ounce. And at $20 per ounce, this project also generates attractive cash flows. But if we go over and above the $21.50 per ounce, the project generates very significant cash flow, and that provides significant opportunities for our shareholders to realize other opportunities from this asset. I'm going to give you a little bit of background now on the Revenue Silver Mine. It's a historic producer located near the town of Ouray in southwest Colorado, about 490 kilometers southwest of the city of Denver. The mine operated in the late 1800s and early 1900s, producing about 14 million ounces from narrow, very high-grade epithermal precious metal veins that were selectively high-graded and hand-cobbed. There's about 700,000 tons of additional mineralized material that's actually been left in stopes that that we feel adds additional upside value for this asset if they can be if we can recover the metal from those materials that are still in the stopes. These are not included in the current resource base for the mine. The mine actually closed in 1912 after the mill burned, and since that time there's been significant additional work carried out by a number of mid-tier silver producers as well as the former owners to validate and expand the known resources. The current SRK Consulting resource totals about 1.5 million tons, containing 26.5 million ounces of silver, about 25% additional value in byproduct credits. And it's important to note that 16.3 million ounces are actually classified as measured and indicated. About 10.2 of that is in the inferred class. We've done extensive due diligence of the mine site. We've also hired consultants in addition to the people at the internal resources that we've used, and we have great comfort that resource is there. And actually has tremendous upside opportunity. The opportunities for future expansion can be summarized basically as follows. There's the horizontal and vertical projection of the known resources in the two main vein systems that are currently used in the resources. Those are the Virginius and the Yellow Rose veins. There are an additional five mineralized vein systems that are intersected by the current mine workings that we know are mineralized but remain essentially unexplored. So there's huge upside opportunity in identifying additional resources there. We've already talked about the 700,000 tons of broken mineralized material that's in surface and underground stockpiles. And then we also think that there is great opportunities because this is a historic silver district. It's called the Sneffels Silver Mining District, and there are other mines that have been identified in the area. And having an operating mill in the area gives us effectively, like a technology company, having first to market status, basically. So anybody who has a smaller operation in this area will likely need to come to us for processing. And having that an existing operation as well as an existing permitted milling facility really provides an opportunity for further expansion in the area. The Revenue Silver Mine is located in an area with significant mining history dating back more than a century and has an existing pool of skilled mine labor and management. This is very critical in the mining industry and a real sensitivity that's been identified in Canadian operations. There's about 90 people currently working at the site, and almost all of the senior positions have already been filled. These management personnel dovetail very well with Fortune's personnel here in London, because we have administrative and technical support here that was designed basically to support remote operations with standalone management teams. So this is the management teams of this project really dovetail well with ours. The mine has excellent infrastructure. It's connected to the Colorado Highway System. There's a county road right to the site that's maintained by the county. It's connected to the electrical grid, and there's surplus power that's been identified, and there's other services connecting the mine site to the town of Ouray, as well as warehouse facilities in Ouray. The site, as we've mentioned previously, is fully permitted and virtually completely constructed. There are some small facilities still being constructed, but it's essentially in operation. And that includes a permitted tailings impoundment facility, which is adequate for the first 6 years of operations. And then we have a plan to deliver the full 13 years of operations through an expansion of that facility. It's not a tailings dam, by the way. The rock that is being mined, once it's the sulfide material has been removed, is has a high percentage of carbonate, so it has a high neutralization potential, and it's dry stacked and disposed of in a fully permitted facility at the site. The mine is an underground operation. It's accessed from basically tracked using what we'd like to call almost museum mining methods. Electric locomotives operate on an adit from the portal to access the main vein systems, which are mined using shrinkage methods principally. And those are accessed from Alimak raises, and there are several Alimak systems currently in operation at the site. The mill is completely built. It's underground, and that's been designed specifically to minimize the mine footprint at the mine site. And it consists of a crushing and grinding plant and flotation concentrator that was designed by CH2M Hill and was constructed with primarily new equipment that includes oversized components, allowing for the ramp up to the 400 ton per day production rate that we hope to achieve shortly. That's an introduction, basically, to the operation. I want to just summarize the key points. This is, we feel, a very accretive transaction because it opens up Fortune to additional shareholder interest. All of the metrics that we've identified for the financial aspects of this project would indicate an approximate double in value over our current market capitalization without giving any value whatsoever for the NICO asset, which has well in excess of $200 million net present value, or the Arctos project, which has about a $600 million net present value. We believe it opens up the company to the kinds of funds that are currently buying resource projects, and it is not in any way a distraction from our goal of, in particular, of developing the NICO mine and concentrator and refinery in the Northwest Territories and Saskatchewan. And very important to recognize that our strategic partner and 19.4% owner of this company is supporting this transaction, both in terms of the due diligence. They sent people to the site to support the evaluation of the asset and the financial model preparation, as well as the financial aspects of the acquisition. They exercised their preemptive right to purchase 19.43% of the company and maintain that interest and help finance the acquisition. I'd like to now just introduce Mr. Jim Williams, who's based in Denver and is the principal shareholder of the selling group, who will be joining our board of directors. He's available to questions at the end of the presentation, but I think it's been pointed out over the weekend by a bunch of our shareholders that they'd like to have an understanding of why the current owners are selling the asset, and also to address other issues, including their confidence in Fortune Minerals. So I'm just going to introduce Jim, who will be joining our board of directors shortly, and let him say a few words. Jim.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. This is Jim Williams. My background is I have a master's in geology, and I've been in exploration-oriented projects for literally decades. And typically we've done projects where we've got exploration, brought them into production, and then sold the project. In this case, we're really excited about joining in with Fortune and their deep operations experience, and I think it's going to really, really enhance this opportunity. There's a lot of other bolt-on type opportunities next to this project that Robin hasn't really even touched on that that make this a very exciting opportunity for me, and I'm really looking forward to being on the board and also being a significant shareholder in, on an ongoing basis. I really see a lot of potential here. And so it's I think that in meeting Robin and his good staff with Mike at the helm, and that it really is going to make the project really thrive and really be very successful with this good deep operations experience that really our team was probably not as high a level as the Fortune team, and I really thought that was a real opportunity for me to be part of and on an ongoing basis. Also, we did an evaluation of Fortune's other opportunities, and we're excited about that as well, and see in the next year, two, 3 years out that this is really looks like this company can really be developed into a really meaningful company. So that was why we made this decision, and I'm excited to go forward and be part of the team and help however I can. I, you know, have done other deals in the 100+ million category in the past, so I have a certain amount of experience with this, and feel like maybe I can help the company continue to add value. So that's where I'm at on it. You know, any, I'm happy to answer any questions. But naturally, we've had a lot of experience with the project, and I'm an American. I'm calling you from the U.S., and we'll stay in the U.S. And maybe I can also, as Fortune moves into the U.S., probably can help give insight on any kind of concerns that might be there. I'll clearly have a vested interest in making sure that Fortune be successful. So I'm really excited about this opportunity.
Thank you, Jim. We'll hold the questions until the end of the presentation. The next part of the agenda is a brief introduction to Mike Romaniak, our Vice President of Operations and Chief Operating Officer. And after Mike's discussion of how we're transitioning this acquisition, basically, and the operation, we will open up the floor to questions from the telephone. Before Mike talks a little bit about the operation, I just wanted to give you a brief background of his experience. Mike was actually we became aware of him through as when we lost our last chief operating officer. He has the perfect background for where we are today. Mike has a long history of successful operating experience in Falconbridge and Xstrata Nickel. The most senior position there was in charge of Sudbury operations, where he ran the about seven mines, two milling operations, as well as the smelter, and has experience with a lot of the metals that we're dealing with. But also very importantly is a long history in the projects group at Falconbridge, and was on the teams and led the construction of multiple mines for Falconbridge, including Nickel Rim, Raglan, and also some of the much larger operations right up to the Alto Norte smelter and Koniambo project. Mike is basically leading our efforts to transition this acquisition, but also the development of our NICO project, and I'd like to introduce you to Mike. And Mike?
Yeah, hi. I guess, you know, some excitement from some of our shareholders related to, you know, why we're doing this, and just from my perspective, when I joined the organization, Robin's always said he wanted to be actually have operating mines, and we are constantly evaluating opportunities, and this one just seemed to fit the bill. Where it stands right now is the senior leadership team is in place at the operation, and very confident in their capabilities and abilities. These are long experienced people that come from good backgrounds, like to be living and have their families in the mining district. A good workforce is available in the area, quite experienced, which gives me additional comfort. We're going to operate this as a decentralized operation. We have in place 30 and 60-day plans to ensure the transition goes as quickly and smoothly as possible. We have an integration team that spent a couple days down there last week. We've been doing planning for about 2 or 3 weeks, and that team will continue to be working with the site team and site management to integrate them into our system and processes. Where does it stand with respect to the operation, the ramp up and commissioning? Been looking at it and been following it very, very closely. We're going to throw a couple of our technical resources, particularly on the process side, down there to help them. We're also going to be leveraging our previously purchased Hemlo assets to continue to supplement that operation with some things that we feel they can use to enhance the operation and get better reliability. The mill is currently working on campaigns. It's running 4 days a week on two shifts, and moving fairly rapidly through that commissioning phase. The mine is easily able to supply 250 tons per day of new ore, and we're continuing our development path so that we can build that up to 400. My sense at this stage is we're probably 3 or 4 weeks away from getting ourselves at 80 to 90% production on a sustained basis. We're working through the issues and items one at a time. So far, we've had no major mechanical issues. We do have some tuning we're doing in our process circuits just to make sure we're making the quality of concentrate that we desire to move forward. We also have a plan to invest another between five and six million in capital. As part of our due diligence, we took a look at where we saw areas of either opportunity or deficiency in the current setups, and we will be putting that $5 to $6 million worth of capital into this operation. It's focused on a number of areas. The mine is going to get some money to enhance the ventilation system, continue the rehab of other levels from the historic workings to get us access to additional ores. We're going to put some money into the concentrator, adding a regrind and some additional pumping capability to assure concentrate quality and put us in a strong position to deliver. It's a very simple process, so there's no real technical concerns from my perspective with respect to the process, and the mining is very straightforward with an experienced workforce to back it up. One item I know everybody's, you know, cautious or curious about was the fatalities that took place in November, and what I'll do is I'll hand that back to Jim to give you where it stands from his perspective and how it fits into the transaction. So, Jim?
Yes, it was. That was a very tragic deal. It was an accident occurring from the action of a couple of individuals. And, you know, I was on site when the fellows were recovered. This is a close-knit group we have, and this was very difficult for me personally to be involved with this. So we the situation is as far as the MSHA and Mine Safety Health Administration manages this in the U.S., and they we've terminated all citations associated from this. Any liability associated with it resides in Star Mine Operations and is not transferred over to Fortune. So Fortune is acquiring the asset, not the liability in this case. So that's the situation. MSHA will issue a final report on this, but we're not sure when. It's probably a ways out, but we really don't know when that will be. Probably months, but I'm not certain. So that's the situation. We redoubled our efforts very stringently on safety, really took a hard look at that, and really have done everything that we can possibly think of to make damn sure that nothing like that happens again. So but once again, I reiterate, it came out of the action of a couple of individuals who were doing things they were instructed not to do, and yet did them anyway. And but we've taken steps to make sure that sort of thing can't happen again. So that's the situation. Happy to, you know, drill into that in more depth in any aspect if you'd like.
And thank you, Jim. You know, so the situation, I think that clarifies where it stands within the transaction. Obviously, I bring and the team that we have in place will bring additional safety systems, safety structure to ensure that kind of tragic incident can't occur moving forward. The other thing that in these kinds of transactions that people get can see risk is going to be on the environmental front. And I'll just reiterate that it is fully permitted. It is fully bonded. There are no historic issues to be dealt with or managed as part of this transaction. And the only thing we have to do to ensure the operation moving forward is to secure additional land, actually do a wetland swap with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to build up our tailings capacity for the life of mine. But we have the first 6 years covered off. So I'm feeling very confident on the environmental side and the environmental risks. That's all I've got to say at this time, unless there's questions.
So having gone through this presentation, we now invite the audience to pose questions to the senior management team and to Jim. So on the call again, I just Troy Nazarevich, Investor Relations, Adam Jean, our Chief Financial Officer, Mike Romaniuk, our Chief Operating Officer, myself, Robin Goad, CEO, and then Jim in Denver for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now conduct the investor question and answer session. Should you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a three-tone prompt acknowledging your request, and your questions will be polled in the order they are received. If you wish to withdraw from the polling process, please press the star followed by the two. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. One moment for your first question. Your first question comes from Michael Fowler, LOM. Michael, please go ahead.
Hey, first of all, I actually got a number of questions. Jim, did you conduct an exclusive with Fortune, or did you open the field to everybody to see if they were interested in this mine?
We had Deloitte lead us on this, and we had so we did a process where we talked to a number of people about it, and actually selected Fortune largely because we felt like their ongoing operation strength was a superior to the other competitors.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Just on the second question, this probably Mike Romaniuk can give me the answer to this. In the ramp-up process, can you tell me something about the recoveries from the various metals? And also, can you tell me something about the you have an agreement with Teck? Are they what kind of percentage payables are they giving for the various metals?
Okay, I'll answer this in order. The design of the mill was based on a number of lock cycle and other test work that allowed the mill to be built or sized, and the primary mechanical devices. So that's sort of the design basis. Where we stand in the current commissioning phase, we've just started recovering concentrate, and our recoveries are too high. We're pulling too hard right now and not making high quality concentrate as we debug the systems and the circuits. So I think you have to stay tuned on the recoveries, but we're confident that the lock cycle test work and the pilot work and the historical recovery from the area and the region can easily be supported. So we'd be looking, we've got different, we're going to make two concentrates. We're going to make the lead con and we're going to make the zinc con with an option to make a copper con. So I'm going to hold off on those recoveries, although I'm confident we'll reach what we was achieved in lock cycle test work. The tech contracts are standard contracts in terms of the payables for a good quality lead con and a low quality zinc con. So the zinc con we're going to plan at least initially to make is going to be between 20 and 25%. And that's why we're going to introduce the regrind mill. We know the mineralogy and we believe with the regrind mill that'll push us up over 40% grade in the zinc con, which will get us a much higher payables. The way the contracts are structured, we just get 85% of the money up front on the payables. And I'm not going to quote the payables because that's confidential commercial terms.
Just a one little note in addition to that is that our financial model is based on more conservative assumptions than what we expect to receive.
Okay, on the mining side, can you talk? I mean, you haven't got there's no feasibility study on this project, so you have resources, but this is quite a narrow vein system. So mine dilution is a key factor. Can you just talk a bit about that, Robin or Mike?
Yeah, just the we're going to go with narrow vein mining methods. We have two options when we take a look at these things. Based on the miner's skill set and how it's historically been approached and the skill set of the workforce, what we've done is we've taken a look at the two primary vein systems that we're basing the economics on. So there's a total of seven vein systems we know of. We're only basing the current mining plan and the mining on two of them. And we are absolutely paranoid about dilution. What we've done is we're going to go with the minimum mining width of 3 feet. And we're adding another foot of dilution on top of that. So we believe, and we have in practice, mined between 3 and 4 feet already within the vein systems. So the dilution we have is based on actual results that are being achieved at the site. And we are very confident with respect to, if you take a look at the vein systems, they're clearly identified in terms of width and the mineralogy. So the guys, the miners and the beat geologists can really tell where the vein is and chase it quite easily. And by using narrow vein systems that they're very comfortable with in the region, which is basically mostly stopers and shrinkage methods, we believe we can keep our mining widths to between 3 and 4 feet on the narrow systems and then go a little wider where we know the veins open up. If you take a look at what we've seen so far and we compare it to historical work, the vein systems are lining up quite nicely in terms of grade, dip, and thickness. We're seeing a typical thickness of about 18 inches. Sorry, I have to speak non-metric because that's the mine. And we've seen the pinch and swell to the veins that line up with historical experiences. So I'm feeling pretty good about that. We will absolutely maintain narrow vein mining methods. We have no interest, in introducing diesel equipment, in introducing bulk mining methods. We're going to stay very selective. And the dips are favorable to us, running, 70% plus. So it will work well with shrinkage methods.
And so just a couple other things before Mike is just to reiterate, the financial model, or sort of the geological model, has been diluted to a minimum mining width by SRK, and then we have applied an additional dilution factor for external overbreak. And one other thing that's very important is there's a nice sharp contact between the vein and the wall rocks. So that also helps in minimizing external dilution.
We also have full Vulcan models and stuff on this, and I've got three resources sort of redoing the mine plan in a quarterly basis and an annual basis, just to make sure that we feel confident in that, in the 400 tons, obviously working with the site guys.
All right, my last question, thanks for all of that. My last question is on the financial side. You've got, what did you say, $5 to $6 million or so of capital to put in, Fortune. Robin, can you talk a bit about the how you're going to finance all of this, the acquisition and also the capital going forward, and how much free cash flow do you have on your balance sheet? Sorry,
okay.
Free cash.
Well, right now, Adam, what's our cash position?
$10 million.
So we have about $10 million right now. We're funding the working capital as part of this transaction. So we have $4 million that's been U.S. that's been put into a working capital fund for the transition period. The next stage of the transaction to acquire 100% interest is $14 million U.S., which is quite nominal. We're looking at all of the various financing opportunities that we have available to us to get that money. Again, we have a very supportive major shareholder in CAMC Procon. And we have some very loyal large shareholders of the company that have been assisting with this. But we're putting together a financing plan, and the next stage of capital requirement is only $14 million, and we feel that this can be accomplished quite easily out of the various sources that are available to us.
Also, I anticipate being easily cash neutral in the next 6 weeks in terms of the operation. I'm feeling pretty confident about that.
So that includes the capital that's put in?
Absolutely.
Yeah, in terms of the capital, about $5.5 million in capital improvements and another $5.5 million of life of mine sustaining capital is built into our model. The capital improvements, Mike has already summarized, are principally improvements to the ventilation, the addition of regrind and jigs to the mill and pumping systems to the mill, as well as the rehabilitation of an internal winze and servicing lower levels of the mine to be able to gain access to some high-grade mineralized material in the Virginius vein in particular. To support operations, so the capital requirements. Part of the attractiveness of this asset was we feel that this acquisition is within our snack bracket, and that we have the financial resources and access to the financial resources to be successful here.
Okay, thanks very much, guys. Good luck, and I'll let somebody else ask some questions.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, should you have a question, please press the star followed by the one. Your next question comes from Killian Charles from Industrial Alliance Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for that, guys. I think Michael answered a lot of questions that I had already, but I wanted to know, is there any underground development work how much underground development work still needs to be done over the next 24 months? In terms of meterage, how much are you planning to do there?
Yeah, we're gonna. Our development is planned to be in ore, so we're gonna extract value as we do our development, and that's gonna be based on the mine plan, which we're just updating. So I think the focus more than anything over the next 24 months will be on rehabilitation of the old upper workings and the winze and lower workings that are available to us. There's been, they had a winze developed historically, and there are some stopes that have been broken down on lower levels. So our focus will be on rehabilitating those sections and on rehabilitating the upper sections of the mine to get us access to ore. So in terms of a very concentrated development program, we don't have a lot of development to do. We're chasing the veins. We're developing an ore. The focus is on rehabilitation. And the rehabilitation to date has gone very well and gone very safely. And we want to continue that path. So we've got $4 million in terms of rehabilitation costs built into our plan at this stage, and that will be our focus.
So
okay.
just to reiterate on that, the most of the lateral development work done, so in terms of developing stopes, it's vertical Alimak work, and that's going very well.
And then, so just so I understand, it was mentioned that the property itself was only bought and not essentially the company that owned it, or I think it was Star Holdings or Star Mines, whatever. Do you gain access to any tax loss or anything of that nature?
It was an asset purchase, and no, we do not receive any tax benefit from the prior work.
Okay, so, you know, from day one, you'll start paying, after I'm assuming the capital will count against it, but you'll start paying tax directly. What's the sort of the tax outlook for Colorado?
Sure. And the Colorado state and federal combined is in the high 30s, but we are currently undertaking some tax planning strategies to utilize our intercompany structure between Canada and the U.S., and looking at getting some Canadian income from the mine, as well as utilize some of our tax pools that we currently hold in Canada.
Yep.
We also, Fortune Minerals also has a marketing company in a tax-friendly jurisdiction, and we're looking at how we best utilize that structure through the sale of concentrate and marketing of the metals from the site.
Okay, and then talking about the sales of the concentrate from the site, for the deal that you have with Teck, is it free on rail, or do you have to yourself bring it directly to trails?
We have to arrange transport to trail.
Okay, and how far are you from railhead?
It's the closest railhead is in Montrose, and Montrose is a 45-minute drive.
So you're going to truck it to Montrose and then put it on rail? What's your cost estimate for the rail aspect?
At this stage, we are going to truck to trail, but we are investigating
okay.
the use of the railhead because it's far cheaper. The problem you end up when you go to these railheads is timing of cash flow.
Yeah.
We get paid 85% on delivery. So depending on the train time, we'll either adjust our strategy to go to rail, which is far cheaper, or stay with the trucks.
How much is how much?
Tonnage.
Sorry?
Not a lot of tonnage.
How much tonnage are you expect to do on a, let's say, monthly basis of con?
Oh, I got to do some calcs here.
Well, on a daily basis, 400 tons gives you how much tons of concentrate?
Maybe Jim,
I don't have any.
I think it's about a truck a day.
Yeah.
A truck a day.
6 days. Yeah. Truck a day, 6 days a week, maybe something like that.
Okay, so you'd only fill out enough rail once every month or so, just about.
Yeah. So it's probably we're going to stay with trucking because we get the cash right away.
And how much is it costing you to truck per ton?
Don't have it in front of me.
Okay.
But it's a high-value concentrate. It's not material.
Yeah, exactly. It ends up adding to not that much.
It's something like $3,000 or $4,000 a load. It's something like that.
Okay. And there's zero identified penalties in the concentrate at this point in time?
She's a clean con. There's no penalties.
Okay. All right, well, that's all I have for now. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Gillian.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one.
I'd also just like to apologize, but at 11 o'clock we have another teleconference scheduled with the local paper, so we have 10 minutes.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Santor Ranieri from Paradigm Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi there, Rob. Just two quick questions. One, just on clarification. The sustaining capital is, life of mine is $5.5 million?
That's in our assumption, yes.
Okay, so not, it's not per year. Okay, just want to make sure I had that right. And just secondly, maybe something a little more tactical or strategic. What is Procon's intent with this, supporting this acquisition? Like, what is it in terms of bigger picture, in terms of the attraction of being involved in this particular project?
I think principally, Fortune sees, or Procon sees this as being accretive to its proposed project financing for NICO, because we're essentially an operating company, and hopefully also receive the re-rating in the stock. Secondly, I believe that they perceive Fortune to be their platform for further acquisitions in the minerals industry. We're looking at all kinds of opportunities together. We have great confidence and comfort in working with each other. They have confidence in our management team and our ability to execute. The services that Procon actually provides are not being used in this particular case. We're using a local mining force. We have no intention of getting into contract mining, but they see us as a platform for further investment in the minerals industry, which would be accretive to their business, which is not just in the mining side, but also in other services, including EPC services, because CAMPC is an international EPC provider.
Thank you.
This concludes the Q&A session and today's conference call. If there are any additional questions, please contact Fortune Minerals Investor Relations Manager, Troy Nazarevich, at 519-858-8188 or by email at info@fortuneminerals.com. Thank you for participating. Please disconnect your lines.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, guys. Yeah.
Thank you, Jim.